everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's December 2018, and you're listening to episode 100, Caught Looking, Hitchcock's Films in the Age of Instagram. And I can't believe it's been 100 episodes since we started this podcast back in 2016. I hope that you've enjoyed all the very thought-provoking interviews that we've had with journal authors on a wide variety of issues and topics related to Christian apologetics and the Christian faith and Christian living, as well as cultural apologetics. We'd love it to keep this podcast free to you, and so we're asking that you would support us by subscribing to the Christian Research Journal if you don't already do so. And you can easily do that. We have a new lower price for our subscriptions of $33.50 for 6 issues, and you can go online to our website, equip.org, to subscribe. And it's Christmas time, so for the holidays, you might be considering a gift subscription for a friend, family member, or your pastor. And if you already have a subscription, please look to give some gift subscriptions away. And I hope you continue enjoying the next 100 episodes. And on this episode, I'm joined once again by Dr. Philip Tallon, who is the chair of the Apologetics Department at Houston Baptist University. He's the author of The Absolute Basics of the Christian Faith. Phil has written an upcoming feature article for the Christian Research Journal on the films of Alfred Hitchcock, and his article is called Caught Looking, Hitchcock's Films in the Age of Instagram. Phil, it's really great to have you on again.
Well, great. Very happy to be back, and I appreciate you having me back so many times.
Yeah, well, I would like you to kind of give some background on who the film director Alfred Hitchcock is and why, you know, in the 21st century, are his films still of interest to viewers?
Yeah, well, Hitchcock, of course, is you know, one of the most beloved directors in Hollywood history, and he got his start. He's from a basically working class British family, a Catholic family, born around the turn of the century, and basically kind of came up through the ranks. He was a working artist right from the beginning. He started off doing the, you know, titles for silent films. And, you know, as one would expect, he showed himself to be very capable as a craftsman and worked his way up through. He actually met his wife in his young days working on silent films, and she was his superior originally. And he wound up, obviously, at that day, sort of women had a pretty clear ceiling for what they could achieve, but she was a brilliant and excellent writer and had an incredible capacity as a filmmaker and basically was his sort of silent partner for almost his entire film career. Her name is Alma. And Hitchcock pretty quickly rose up through the ranks and was given the opportunity to direct movies. And so he directed over 50 films in his lifetime. His career spanned the entirety, basically, of what we would see as the sort of steps in Hollywood filmmaking. He moved from silent to talkies. He moved from black and white to color. He moved past the Hays Code. And so he made R-rated films as well as, you know, films under the Legion of Decency. So he basically kind of spanned the entirety of cinema history in his work and excelled at every stage.
Well, what kind of influence does he have, particularly so many years later? I mean, the films that he's best known for, he directed in the mid to late 1950s, and of course, Psycho in 1960. So what kind of influence does he have in modern filmmaking and today's filmmakers?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I mean, I think, you know, his influence is felt a lot of places. He certainly accelerated the form, and he, you know, came up with some new tricks that people still use today. So the famous push-pull zoom that you often see when someone's experiencing disorientation, where the background kind of zooms away from them, is something he had tried to figure out for years. He wanted to use it in a certain scene in Rebecca, and he couldn't quite get it, but he finally figured it out for Vertigo, how to give this sort of sense that the ground was zooming away from Jimmy Stewart in that movie when he's experiencing his fear of heights. And you see that all over the place. He has other little cinematic tricks. At one point in The Birds, a character reaches forward basically toward the camera, and light washes across him as if he's opening a door, and it's only in rewatching it that you realize there was no door there. That was a pure cinematic trick that Hitchcock pulled on us. A guy just reached out below the frame, and then, you know, he did something with the lights to make it seem as if he was opening a door. And I saw that same trick recently in a Wes Anderson movie, The Life Aquatic. So Hitchcock's cinematic influence as a kind of craftsman is everywhere felt. But his thematic presence, I think, is sort of most sharply felt in, you know, what he sort of stewarded with the introduction of Psycho, especially. If you look at some of his earlier movies, they feel, aesthetically at least, fairly traditional. They're, you know, everybody's dressed beautifully, they're shot so beautifully. They're thrillers, but they're kind of not too transgressive. But Psycho ushered in really a new age of cinema. In some sense, it's the beginning almost of New Hollywood, in that it breaks a lot of rules. It does things very differently than things have been done before. It's almost a postmodern film, fitting with the title of your podcast, in that it's playful. It's sort of winking at the audience. It's very knowing, and so it's self-aware in that regard. And there's a recent book called The Moment of Psycho by a major film critic that argues that Psycho really is the kind of the grandfather of, you know, films by people like the Coen brothers, who have written about or talked about for Postmodern Realities, and Quentin Tarantino, in that it's so kind of playful and self-aware and kind of ironic in some sense in its detachment from the subject matter at hand. And so I think it's an incredibly influential movie for understanding film history.
I do want to tell our listeners that Phil just mentioned it, if you're new to listening to this podcast, that he has done two episodes for us on other film directors, one that was on Quentin Tarantino and then another one on the Coen brothers. And he has written accompanying articles for those sets of filmmakers. And they are available free online at our website, equip.org, if you would like to read those. And then also go back and download those episodes, episode number 1 and episode 50, about those filmmakers. So given that, like, where do you rank him in just kind of like the best known directors, the most significant directors? Where would you rank Hitchcock? I mean, he's a precursor. He's probably had a lot of influence, a lot of modern filmmakers. So how does he fit in with kind of the best known directors that people would know?
Mm-hmm. Well, he's certainly a top 10 director. I think that almost all critics would agree to that. In his life, he was not very highly esteemed for a long portion of his career. And it really wasn't until the Hitchcock-Truffaut book and a lot of the Cahiers du Cinéma folks in France started really appreciating his work that he began to get serious critical recognition. And this is to some degree what came with the rise of like real serious film studies in the 60s and 70s. But, you know, so he's a top 10 guy. I don't know. It's very hard to rank him exactly. You know, maybe in my heart he's number one, but I think there are certainly some other directors that, you know, you could easily put up there as being, you know, the greatest Hollywood film directors or just film directors of all time. So, you know, I don't know if he beats Kubrick or Spielberg or the Coen brothers or, you know, John Ford out for top ranking exactly, but he's certainly right up there as a major director. I do think that there is something about Hitchcock's work that probably would ever keep him from resting naturally at the first spot, which is that though he deals with very human themes and he's very aware of human frailty and the, you know, tragedy and difficulty of the world we live in, there's a sense in which Hitchcock never really truly kind of takes on the full range of human emotionality. His movies are thrillers, they're exciting, they're always fun to watch, but I don't know that they kind of explore fully what it means to be human in the way that some of the other truly great directors do. And so that probably would keep him from being seen as our greatest director.
Well, I'd like to ask you what you think are Alfred Hitchcock's most significant films. I mean, he did direct more than 50 films, but I think he's only known for a few of them. I mean, the average person obviously knows about Psycho and The Birds and North by Northwest with Cary Grant and Vertigo. Those are the kind of the ones that, you know, people can think of, you know, off the top of their heads. But what would you say out of his whole work, life's work, is his most significant films?
Well, I think that the ones he's best known for are his best. Those are the kind of the Cary Grant, Jimmy Stewart years, were really a kind of a golden era. He's at the height of his powers. I think he's operating in a studio system that's really kind of supporting him, and is letting him sort of do what he wants to do with the budget that he needs and the stars that he needs. And so that, you know, those sort of 50s and 60s movies. And so you think about Vertigo, which may be kind of one of his last, you know, truly great films, but also Rear Window, North by Northwest, and some of those other kind of surrounding movies are just, they're really perfect. Hitchcock really needs strong actors to carry his movies because so much of what he does is sort of abstracted. It's, he goes for it. He gets emotional effects with very minimal kind of, you know, dialogue, just editing and kind of expressions on faces. And so he needs really iconic actors very often to fill those roles in order to carry the weight of what he wants his actors to do. And so when he's working with top actors, you know, that makes for a really great movie. And so Rear Window, you know, most of the film, you know, you're just sitting there looking at Jimmy Stewart or Grace Kelly or whatever it is they're seeing across the apartment complex at a distance. And the movie works perfectly because they're incredible. Hitchcock kind of has exactly what he needs to make a perfect movie. And so I would say, you know, I think Rear Window is probably my favorite movie. It may not be truly his greatest. I think Vertigo could easily, you know, the argument could easily be made that that's his greatest movie, and it has been ranked as the best movie of all time in various lists. But if anybody hasn't seen any Hitchcock or wants to go back, go watch Rear Window. You'll love it, I guarantee.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Dr. Philip Tallon, and Phil has written an upcoming feature article for the Christian Research Journal on the films of Alfred Hitchcock, and his article is called Caught Looking, Hitchcock's Films in the Age of Instagram. To read his article, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is now at a new lower price of $33.50, and to subscribe online, visit equip.org. And this is a magazine that I know would make a great stocking stuffer or Christmas gift that's coming up. We have the Christmas season, so if you already have a subscription, consider getting one for your pastor, a family member, or a friend. We were just talking about what you think were his most significant films, but of course, we need to discuss his main themes in those films. I think there's just so much to explore, and a lot of films, even though, I mean, they definitely, all these, I mean, more than 50 years later, have stood the test of time in terms of some of the great cinema of all time. And so what are some of his main thematic concerns, and are those still relevant for Christians to consider today, for example?
So, you know, I talk about voyeurism or spying or looking in my article, and I'll get to that in a second. But one of the other main themes in Hitchcock's work is the sort of being wrongly accused is something that he returns to fairly often. So he has many movies where somebody is mistaken for a criminal, and then they have to flee from the law. And you see this set up again and again. This comes up in North by Northwest or in The Wrong Man or in The 39 Steps. And it's a really classic setup, you know, where basically the hero is wrongly accused. He has to flee from the cops and catch the criminals himself in order to get off the hook. And this may be connected. People have often talked about Hitchcock's Catholicism, his kind of fear of and suspicion of authority. Hitchcock is very aware of our kind of vulnerability in the world. And he's as a person, he was a, you know, very kind of controlled, measured, guarded, boundaried person, you know, who kind of liked his safety. And some of that may come out in his work in that his heroes are often kind of stumbling into danger unwitting. And I think that that's suggestive in that Hitchcock is really attuned to the ways that kind of the world can be unjust, can be unsafe, can be challenging, and he exploits all that, of course, for our entertainment. I mean, he makes fabulous thrillers that spring out of this, you know, the problems that arise from, you know, accidental encounters and mistakes and so forth. So that's one theme, is that wrong man, wrongfully accused theme. There's another theme, though, that I think is really worth attending to. And when I started to work on the article, I tried to think about what's Hitchcock had to say that's really relevant for us now. And one of the ideas that he plays with again and again is a little bit of a morally askew, somewhat indicting observation that he really thinks that everybody is really a peeping Tom. Everybody likes to spy into the lives of others, to see things that are hidden that they're not supposed to. And he himself, in his interviews with, you know, Hitchcock, with Truffaut, talks about, you know, how he knows people like to do this sort of thing. They like to spy into each other's lives. And so you see again and again in a lot of his key films, Rear Window, Jimmy Stewart's in a wheelchair. All he's got to do all day long is look out the rear window of his apartment into the open windows of all his neighbors. At one point, his nurse comes in and says, you know, we've become a nation of peeping Toms. And so she diagnoses the problem. And I think it was sort of a novel, interesting observation at the time, but it's now become a pandemic that we live with culturally, where we all have the ability at any moment to sort of spy into the lives of others. This is something that's actually kind of consuming us. And, you know, people have, you know, the newest version of your Apple operating system has a setting that it can turn off your social media for you after amount of time that you set, so you don't do this too much, so you don't become kind of consumed at watching the lives of others. And so Hitchcock is aware of that. And I think what he has to add to the conversation is that he's not just aware that we want to do this, but one of the things he's also really aware of is that everybody who's spying into the lives of others eventually is discovered themselves. And so this may tie back into what some have called his kind of Catholic guilt complex, or his sort of sense of moral vulnerability in the world, which is that, you know, no sort of sin ever remains ultimately hidden. Everything is ultimately brought into the light, right? And so you see all the characters in his movies that deal with this, you know, their peeping is eventually discovered. This happens in Rear Window with Jimmy Stewart. He's been spying on his neighbor, who he thinks is a murderer, and eventually the neighbor sees him. This happens with Norman Bates, who thinks nobody sees what's going on in his life, and he's totally invisible and unseen, and eventually he's discovered. And they see this in Vertigo. You see this all over the place. So I think it's a very relevant, timely point that Hitchcock is making, and one of the ways that Hitchcock was definitely ahead of his time in seeing how much we really wanted to peep into the lives of others.
You mentioned Norman Bates, and for people who haven't seen some of Hitchcock's films, that's one of the main characters in Psycho. And just thinking about the fact that Hitchcock is today still just so captivating, his themes is recently, a couple years ago, they kind of did a prequel to the film Psycho in a TV series that was executive produced by Carlton Kuse, mm-hmm. about the Bates Motel and everything. So I think there's still something that does definitely interest modern audiences about his themes. And so mm-hmm. are there other deeper kind of themes and forces at work in Hitchcock's films that are really captivating to fans and even to a new generation of fans?
Yeah, well, the ongoing interest in Psycho is notable. Obviously, Psycho didn't originate with Hitchcock. It came from material that had already been published and from a kind of a potboiler book that he had found. But Psycho certainly deals with the sort of generational sin, as it were, and in the ways that the kind of sins of the father or the mother in this case then are borne by the children. And so all throughout that movie, you see that everybody is always thinking about their mothers, right? And this brings in maybe some of the kind of psychoanalytic interest that Hitchcock has. But, you know, the main character that we start with, Marion Crane, you know, she's, her mother is referred to early on, you know, as potentially a source of moral disapprobation, and her coworker talks about how her mother called to see if her husband called. And then, of course, we meet Norman, who's always talking about mother, and whose mother is kind of so oppressive that he's internalized her even after she's dead. Spoiler, obviously, for anyone who hasn't seen the movie. It's over 50 years old now, so I think the expiration date on spoilers has elapsed. So there's this idea that Hitchcock is very aware of, that, you know, kind of there are ripple effects in families and in people from the previous generation. And that TV show, which I haven't watched much of, Bates Motel, obviously explores that at even greater length. And there are a bunch more Psycho movies, but I don't think anybody really watches those anymore. But that sort of notion of still carrying within us things from the past is something that Hitchcock returns to periodically. He explores it in a movie that he did called Spellbound, starring Gregory Peck, which is kind of, I think it's minor Hitchcock, has a few interesting things, including a collaboration with Salvador Dali, which is probably why it's most worth seeing. And Gregory Peck is wonderful and Ingrid Bergman is great, but it's all about kind of psychoanalysis and how we have these kind of repressed memories or repressed feelings that, you know, are actually controlling and shaping our lives, even if we're not aware of them. And so you see, again, maybe what is sort of perhaps a kind of a form of Hitchcock's Catholic theology of, I mean, or Christian theology of, that there's this original sin that we bear within us, that even, you know, so that we, as it were, kind of carry with us the sins of our ancestors and are born already with these forces at work, even when we don't want them to be.
In addition to what you note in your article just about this idea of, you know, trying to peer into the lives of others, and, you know, you mentioned current operating systems. I mean, now there are applications on your mobile phone that you can even see who's near you if you haven't turned off your location devices. Mm-hmm. You can see if someone's even near you, you know, locationally, and that seems a little, you know, just very kind of creepy. And maybe he was alluding to that in some of his films. But what would he have to say to us today? Like, what are some things that are just really important for us to consider through his work that we really need to consider, you know, in 2018?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a little funny because one thing that Hitchcock is not is a moralist, which is to say that his movies are very rarely intend to kind of convey any message. You know, he's not a preachy filmmaker, and actually quite the opposite. I mean, in certain ways, Hitchcock is a kind of an amoral filmmaker, which is to say that he doesn't really take any kind of moral responsibility for the audience. I think he delights a little bit in being kind of like a sort of a trickster and seeing what he can get away with. And in his, certainly as his film career went on and as restrictions loosened up, you know, then he, I think, got to kind of, you know, be even more violent, you know, have even kind of darker content. And so, you know, it's not as if, you know, Hitchcock is some wise teacher, you know, but he is. And so insofar as he deals with issues of voyeurism, for instance, he actually wants to kind of implicate us as much as he wants to teach us, which is he sort of wants to show us, well, you know, you're not so righteous and so good. You like doing this sort of thing too. And so he's kind of this, like, you know, kind of like a friend that's, you know, trying to drag us down a little bit to his level in that regard and sort of knock us off our high horse. But I think a discerning viewer can still interact with Hitchcock's movies in a virtuous way and sort of see what he's going for and still enjoy the effect without, and recognize even the implication and then learn a valuable lesson from it. So we, you know, I think he does show us the degree to which we also are like the characters that we're watching, in that we have kind of this excessive, you know, curiositas, you know, this kind of desire maybe to sort of see or know things that aren't really for us to know. It's a theme also, I assume a lot of your listeners may be more familiar with C.S. Lewis than Hitchcock, but, you know, Lewis is often talking about in the Narnia Chronicles, one of the main themes running through it is kind of a mind your own business sort of theme. Aslan always says, you know, I don't tell anyone anybody else's story except their own. Diggory Kirk, the professor, says to the kids, have you just thought about minding your own business instead of, you know, nosing in the lives of others? There's this theme running through, you know, Hitchcock then and Lewis, where they're sort of pointing out that, you know, we can be nosy sometimes and we need to kind of watch out for that, or it can get us into trouble. And I think that's a valuable lesson for us to learn. And I think it's, and it may be, I mean, quite honestly, I don't think I'm exaggerating, it may be one of the most pressing issues culturally that we deal with right now, which is that we're living in an age consumed with moral outrage at sort of the sins of others, where very little of our energy is dedicated to kind of introspection, you know, penitence about our own sin and real kind of moral work to get our own house in order. And so I think that's a valuable lesson for us to take away from Hitchcock, even if it's not one that Hitchcock is pressing us to be.
I want to tell our listeners, several years ago, there's an article, now it's free online on our website, about television and film being the new literature. So that's just, they're just great tools to use for apologetics. So what might Christians learn from studying his films, from Hitchcock's films, and how would his films be a good apologetic tool as a springboard to talk about the existence of God?
Well, you know, I generally think that anything that kind of pushes people out of their grooves that they're naturally in and kind of puts them in a sort of, creates a little bit of common space and where you can kind of, you know, ask questions and people don't feel like their identity is threatened, those are nice launching off points. So it's hard to do that with explicitly about religion if you start with that, or about politics, or about, you know, I don't know, certain kind of moral issues. But I think there's a way in which, you know, you can kind of find a different campfire to gather around and have some conversations. And so in thoughtful, articulate art is one of those campfires where you can kind of get people together, especially watching an old movie, you know, people feel a little bit of a pat on the back that they're watching something that's in black and white. And so aren't they so cultured? And you can have a discussion. And we do this at HBU. We have a film series that we're doing right now called Big Ideas on the Big Screen. And we gather students together and we watch a movie. It takes, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours, and then we can have some conversation afterward. And it really opens up the possibility of having some deeper discussions. And Hitchcock's great for talking about that because his movies are fun to watch, but they're also fun to think about. And that's not always the case. Some movies that are fun to think about are kind of tough to watch, you know, and take a lot of real work to sit there and pay attention. And that's good to do, but it's also kind of hard maybe to gather some people around to do that. And there are also movies that are fun to watch that aren't really worth thinking about at all. And Hitchcock's the perfect balance of both of those things, which is that he's, you know, he really invites us to think about his movies. And so one of the things I talk about in the piece is that, you know, Hitchcock has a cameo, as people often know, in basically every one of his movies after The 39 Steps, I think. He was always in there somewhere, sometimes in a very small kind of hidden way. You know, and Hitchcock is kind of, when he's doing that, he's, you know, having a bit of cheeky fun. You get to watch out for where you're going to see him. But he's also sort of making a point, which is that this movie is constructed. It's made for us by a person for us to watch and to think about. And so he's sort of revealing, as it were, the art in the midst of making the art. He's kind of a magician who's doing the trick. And then he's sort of showing us how he did the trick. And he's great at both of those things. And that's what I think makes him such a special filmmaker, is that his movies are as interestingly constructed and crafted as they are just to watch.
Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions. So, Phil, pumpkin spice latte or pumpkin pie?
Well, I'd have to say I go for pumpkin pie. I will drink a pumpkin spice latte. I'm not one of these people who complains about women and their pumpkin spice lattes. They're delicious. But I don't like paying, you know, $4 or $5 for coffee when I can normally get it for free in the office.
What's one of your favorite hobbies besides watching films?
Well, we're big into hiking these days, and so we often get out and hike. And so I'm a little challenged being here in Houston because there are not a lot of excellent places to hike. We get away to the mountains as often as we can to hike, and that is my go-to thing I do when I can.
Yeah, isn't Houston like at sea level or something? It's pretty flat.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big steam pot here, and we love where we are. We're in the center of a very large city, and so it's a long ways to get out. North Carolina is, you know, you get in your car and you drive for 5 minutes and there's some waterfall for you to see or something like that.
That's probably true for Western North Carolina, that's for sure. Now, are you an introvert or extrovert?
Oh, an introvert all the way. And being an academic, I imagine if you went up and down the hall, most of the people you encountered would likewise be introverts.
And how old were you when you became a Christian?
That's a good question. I think somebody asked, Karl Barth when he became a Christian, and he said 33 AD. And so that's a little bit true of me as well, which is to say I was baptized in the church, raised as a Christ follower. Of course there was a kind of moment in, as I was heading into high school that, I did not take my faith seriously. I was not trying to practice in any way, living as a Christian, and God just sort of got a hold of me then, and I met some wise people that helped resolve some of my kind of doubts and questions and some of the things that were starting to grow in my mind. But then of course last week too, God, got a hold of me. And so I think, for me, the answer is, I've always been becoming a Christian, and still shaping me into one.
That's a very thoughtful answer. Thanks, Phil, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Yeah, glad to be here. Hopefully you'll have me back for number 200.
Today's guest is Dr. Philip Tallon, and Phil has written an upcoming feature article for the Christian Research Journal on the films of Alfred Hitchcock, and his article is called Caught Looking, Hitchcock's Films in the Age of Instagram. To read his article, please subscribe to our journal, and a 6-issue subscription is now at a new lower price of $33.50. To subscribe, go to our website, equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Hanegraaff, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. Follow the Bible Answer Man on Instagram, and please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes. And when you rate and review our podcast, it helps others to find our content. So please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged. It's Hank's new audio podcast. You'll follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.